Hey everyone, this is Robbie Rodriguez, and this is my redneck sidekick, Jason Latour.
Ain't nobody sidekick, boy. Y'all listening to the Amazing Spider Talk.
Hello and welcome to the Amazing Spider Talk. My name is Dan Gavazdin and I'm the editor of SuperiorSpiderTalk.com.
And I'm Mark Cianacchio. I'm the editor of the Chasing Amazing blog.
Thanks for joining us for the 10th episode of Amazing Spider Talk. We hope you enjoy this podcast and that it provides an intelligent conversation between two fans and collectors as we hope to look at the Spider-Man comic universe in a bit of a bigger picture.
Yeah, Dan, it's been a while, right?
Yeah, sorry for the break, everybody, but we hope you really enjoyed those two interviews that Mark and I did.
Yes, I listened to yours, and even though I never watched the Spider-Man animated series, I now feel like I know everything about it, and you also conducted a great interview, Dan.
Oh, thanks, man. Same with you. Giuseppe, all the way from Argentina.
Argentina, not Italy, but you know, it was still an international call, which was great times. But anyway, so you heard about those two episodes, but for this episode, we will be talking Amazing Spider-Man number 10 by Dan Slott and Olivia Coipel, answering some fan mail, giving away prizes, discussing Amazing Spider-Man volume number 2, number 31 by J. Michael Straczynski and John Romita Jr. Anything else, Dan, in this episode?
I think that's about it. I'm excited to talk about Volume 2, number 31 with you. And I know some people are following along with us like it's like a reading club. So, you know, this is going to be exciting getting into this next issue.
Agreed.
Well, remember, guys, if you hear this sound, please check out your iOS device for a link to an article, video, or image to enhance your listening experience. Mark, we got a lot to cover, and it's crazy in Spider-Verse, so let's get right to it. Amazing Spider-Man number 10.
Is she really going out with him?
Oh, there she is. Let's ask her.
Betty, is that Jimmy's ring you're wearing?
Mm-hmm.
Gee, it must be great riding with him. Is he picking you up after school today?
Mm-mm.
By the way, where'd you meet him?
All right, Dan, Amazing Spider-Man number 10, part 2 of Spider-Verse. We really liked the part 1 a lot. I have to think after finishing this comic that while I still think it's better than some of the issues we were getting prior to the start of Spider-Verse, this felt like a bit of a step back for me for some reason. I don't know. Things weren't clicking. I think we were getting back to that thing that I was a little concerned about before Spider-Verse even kicked off, which was that, you know, was it going to be more about just throwing all these characters out there rather than actually developing them? You know, like I didn't feel that some of those little details, like giving these characters their own voices and personalities, was really done. I had some issues with how Spider-Rock was brought back into it, but we'll get into finer details with that. But, you know, any general thoughts before we get into the details, Dan?
Well, one of my thoughts about this, and it kind of gets down to how we review these books, like it's hard and maybe inappropriate to review like a 6-issue story arc issue by issue, because like clearly there are going to be issues that are bridges to other things and maybe just don't stand on their own as a completed work of entertainment. And I would say the first issue probably doesn't either. And I bet that you'll see our grades go up on these books as we get deeper into the story and conclusions and twists and all the guns start getting fired. So, like, this issue does feel like, I agree with you, it's like a step down from the last issue. And it also feels very much like a let's send everybody off on their own ways and set up everything. So, yeah, things don't feel very satisfying. And maybe I'm okay with that. I'm willing to give this the benefit of the doubt, because I know that it seems to be setting up all these other things to be happening.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying, and I think you're mostly right with that. When it, you know, and we'll obviously get to this in the second half of the show when we talk about Volume 231 with JMS and Romita Jr. I mean, like, you can still look at, you know, kind of a piece of a story in terms of its merits and storytelling and artwork and all that. And you know, I feel that there are some legitimate issues regarding that when it comes to Amazing Spider-Man number 10 here. I mean, it's there were some things that Dan Slott, as, you know, as a writer, was doing well in the first part that I don't feel he really addressed in the second part. And then some stuff that he, you know, just forgot to do, or maybe, I don't know. I mean, I mean, let's talk what the big selling point of this comic was, which was the return of Otto Octavius, the Superior Spider-Man. Did this, you know, in terms of kind of the build to this, you know, we got Otto in those two little side Superior issues, but, you know, for all intents and purposes, in terms of real time, I mean, this is the first we've seen of Otto since, you know, the end of Superior. Did it meet your expectations?
Well, no. I mean, you know, he's just as enjoyable to read as ever in this issue. Like, what are my expectations? Like, my expectations are that Peter and Otto will come to blows and finally settle what I wish had been settled at the end of the Superior story. Is it fair that I place that onus on this issue? With, you know, I'm imagining that's going to occur in the next issue, especially I've seen the previews and the artwork seems to imply that. And the ending of this issue seems to imply that as well. That said, it is odd, and I imagine that this is your problem with it, Mark, that Peter seems to take such a back seat here and not address it right away. This is the man that killed me.
Yeah, he doesn't address it, but I think shockingly, Otto doesn't address it. I mean, like here's something. I was a little confused in the structure of this story. So if I'm talking out of turn here, by all means, correct me, Dan. But I mean, was Otto aware that there was 616 Spider-Man there?
Well, you know, Peter's hiding in the background here. I'm not sure that he knew that he was there. And I actually think that that's a plus for this book, at least visually. I like what Coypel did, where Peter is very small and Otto is this large, hulking, dominating force in the frames. And, you know, it sets up the idea that Otto is going to be running this show, even though we get a little bit of a, you know, that kind of being challenged here. I think maybe this book will end up being about Otto and Peter's different ways of addressing this problem, allowing Peter to regain, you know, that dominance as Spider-Man that I wanted, you know, like I said, at the end of Superior. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, did you pick up on that? Was that, or is that just me?
With Otto, it's not even just that Peter is in the background and not saying anything. I mean, I'm just surprised that Otto didn't say anything. I mean, you know, why isn't he incredulous about Peter being around? And I guess you can say he didn't notice, but it kind of ties into another issue I was having, which is where this version of Spider-Rock is derived from. And this goes all the way back, Dan, to what I was saying a few episodes ago when we were talking about those Spider-Verse prologues. In terms of the rules of Spider-Verse. And, you know, what we've seen so far is that all these different spiders come from parallel worlds, so to speak. That's how, when I made comment about the Civil War era spider with this, you know, the Iron Spider being killed by the Inheritor, is that it was, well, it's not the real Spider-Man, it's someone from another parallel world where Civil War continued and blah, 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 blah. And yet, Otto here, you know, the way it's being explained is that he's not from a parallel world. It's not like another Earth where, Otto Octavius maintained, you know, his identity as the Superior Spider-Man. He's from a different time. He's traveling in time. And I just feel like I can't fully put my finger on why I feel this is, but this just feels like some kind of level of cheating. You know what I mean? And like why are the rules different for this one character?
Yeah, I mean, it does open up a lot of loopholes. Like, if he can time travel, it basically means the inheritors can time travel. Because they were able to go to the future and pick him up.
Yeah, it's just like it just opens something up, and you know, I'm going to assume, because you know, with pretty much everything that Dan Slott does, you know, and this is something that we criticize him for sometimes, you know, he sometimes kind of writes in these either weird character moments or weird plot moments because he's trying to serve the larger story. So, you know, we need Spider-Rock here, and it needs to be the Spider-Rock. And I'm sure there's going to be a reason for it. But in the interim, I don't know, it kind of, especially when you're dealing with a writer who does this a lot, I don't know. You know, it's kind of like a boulder rolling downhill. You start to notice these things more and more, and it starts to distract you from the story. At least it distracts me.
Yeah, it doesn't distract me as much. It's one of those things where I'm like, oh, comic books. But, like, yeah, it does open a loophole. You know, we also saw another loophole opened in this issue with the clones, which, you know, as soon as I saw that there was a clone involved, I was like, oh, no. Like, is this going to completely flatten this threat? Like, it's an unkillable threat. I mean, like, how I feel about the Jackal. Like, no one will ever kill the Jackal.
Right. And we talked about this with the Hobgoblin earlier in the year, you know, in terms of, you know, is it always going to be a fake? Then, you know, it kind of becomes unfair and cheating.
Yeah. That being said, I do like that this basically solves how Morlun has come back 3 times.
Yeah.
Without really ever like saying that, like, but you know, I guess it's implied that the different Morlans that we've got have been clones.
Yay!
Yeah, I mean,
it's a clone thing. You wouldn't understand, which is, you know, lines that you don't expect to read in comic books, even though they're comic books. But
yeah, I mean, I guess it was never really mentioned in the other how he came back, so. You know, I guess that plot solved.
There you go. You solved the problem that we didn't even know we had. But
I'm a little less worried about the cloning here because I feel like in the pages of Scarlet Spiders, it's going to be solved. Like they're going to destroy the cloning tanks or whatever it is. I mean, it was a bit of a letdown. I was like, oh, really? Did he just kill Deimos that easily? which hold on a second. What are Otto's like spider arms made out of that they can just pierce this Inquisitor like that?
He's the superior Spider-Man, man. That's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, okay, I'll accept it, but I don't know. I mean, also an interesting note, Morlun, when he died in the other ones, he turned to dust. So, you know, I guess it kind of keeps it, you know, consistent.
Right. Well, does Ben Reilly turn to dust, or he just kind of turns into a blob, doesn't he? Like a gelatinous pile of goo?
It was dust. He, like, blew away in the wind.
I thought it was, like, goo, but
well,
you know
okay.
What?
I mean, I'm pretty sure it was dust, but we'll let the – I'll put a picture in here.
Dust or goo, yeah. You decide.
Yeah, right. I don't think it was really that explicit. But, yeah, so, I mean, I guess getting back to the Superior Spider-Man thing, it doesn't bother me as much as it does you, I think. But it is bothersome because it does kind of say, like, the rules here aren't really as solid as you might think.
Yeah, well, that's just it. I mean, I want rules, and I'm not going to get them. And, you know, I guess that's just tough noogies on me, but I don't know. I think rules keep stories honest. I think rules keep stories focused and structured. You know, just call me an inside-the-box kind of guy.
Okay. Well, you know, I guess that's our word on that. What? Anything else you liked in this issue?
Well, can I talk about something else that kind of frustrated me a little bit?
All right.
You know, we're critics. We got to criticize.
Yeah,
you know.
Go away. Go on.
So the old man spider, he's revealed as Ezekiel here. But it's Ezekiel from another world, but, you know, I'll let that slide.
A world where Peter lost to Moreland.
Correct.
And Ezekiel took up the mantle.
But, you know, like his parting words of wisdom to Peter were that, you know, just to protect the, you know, the bride, who we believe is Silk, the other, who I'm assuming is Cain, and then the Scion.
I don't know. Scion sounds good to me.
Which, you know, per definition usually means like kin. So, you know, someone familial. So, you know, speculate away. But, you know, like when he said that, it kind of like, you know, I mean, not for nothing. It's kind of been what Spider-Verse has been in a nutshell in terms of the hit list we've been talking about. I mean, it really does kind of just say these three are the important characters. Everyone else, eh. And like, I don't know, like that just kills me, especially since, you know, part of what I really loved about the first issue in this storyline was how, like, you know, guys like Spider-Ham and Spider-Girl and you know, the Captain Universe Spider-Man, I mean, they all kind of had personalities, you know, like I felt like, you know, work was, you know, gone into them to make me care about these people, even though they're just different iterations of the same character. And, you know, this was basically, you know, the plot telling us, like, yeah, you know, you might like these guys, and, you know, we got some favorites, we got some others you've never heard of, we created some new characters, and by the way, these are the three that are important.
But it could be anyone, Mark.
I guess we're all the Scion.
I'm still anticipating, like, the great weaver weaving everyone back to life at the end. But I don't know.
We are Groot.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I see what you're saying. Like, it kind of cheapens everyone else. But, you know, to me, that actually, like, makes it more exciting, because now I feel like they could all go and maybe he will actually kill them all off.
Well, we already killed Spider-Man Reign, so your tears.
In a very kind of, like, offhanded way.
Well, we all know he died from ingesting radioactive sperm.
Why is he ingesting his own radioactive sperm? You know what? I don't want to know. Don't answer that question.
Things I did like. I thought that we're getting some more death to Silk.
I agree. She is given kind of this impetuous streak. I think that actually continued over into Spider-Woman, number one. And I was like, oh, actually, like, this is kind of interesting that she's, for all of her superior powers, she has some, like, problems in terms of dealing with authority, I guess.
Well, I also just like that she's kind of like the scapegoat and is being viewed as a liability.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Like,
you know, she's not just strictly an asset because, you know, she's got an asset that won't quit. And no, I'm kidding. That was a terrible joke.
I'm not going to dignify that with a response.
But it's, in all seriousness, you know, like the first few appearances, I mean, she's like saving everybody eight times over. And it's like, you know, this woman is invincible. And she should have her own image series. And instead, it's like, no, the Silk is baggage right now for the spiders. Like, she's drawing the inheritors closer. And, you know, I kind of like that not that I want her to be a liability, but, you know, like I said, it adds vulnerability, adds depth of character. It makes me actually want to sympathize and see more of her. That's it in a nutshell.
I just missed everything you said because I was still just so hung up on that terrible dad joke you made about Invincible. I agree with you. Although I am a little curious, by the end of the issue, she's like sent off with the Spider Women to kind of like, and tell me if I, correct me on this, because I'm not sure that I'm entirely clear. Like, are they being sent out to kind of distract the inheritors because her like pull is so strong? Because like otherwise, why don't they just send her back to the safe zone? Like, Spider-Man was told, like, keep these people safe. And we know that she's one of them. So why not keep her safe by sending her back to the safe zone?
I don't know, because that would, you know, story over, man.
I guess. I mean, correct me. Like, is what they're doing with her trying to distract the inheritors?
Yeah, I guess it's just trying to, like, you know, so they're not all just in one space. So they're trying to spread it out. But you're right. Why don't they just stay in the safe zone? Is it like base and tag? You can only stay there for 10 seconds or something?
No, I don't think so. I think you can stay there as long as you want.
I'm just asking.
I mean, clearly she was supposed to stay there from the get-go. She, like, skipped town. You know what I mean?
Right. And
it now makes sense why the Last Stand Spider-Man didn't want her going on any teams, because he wanted to keep her safe for some reason. Although I don't know why he doesn't just tell Spider-Man, like, look, you're the Scion or whatever. Like, just go keep yourself safe.
Yeah, exactly. Go away.
I'll use these incredibly vague, like, code names.
Yes.
For everyone. Oh, whatever. It's a story. You know, I'm willing to let that go. But
Straczynski would be proud with the mumbo jumbo.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. It is interesting, though, like how, like, and we're going to discuss this when we get to the Straczynski issue later. Like, this is weirdly faithful to Straczynski's like writing,
right?
Which has been almost like largely forgotten in the Spider-Man world. And like, we've got the Other and all these other things. Like, I'm kind of happy to see that stuff kind of being concluded.
Yeah, well, you know, it has been forgotten, but it doesn't change the fact that, you know, specifically the story that we've been talking about is probably the last true, like, really great Spider-Man story that we've gotten. I mean, we've had some good ones, but I mean, like, you know, I mean, that, you know, that was like Spider-Man being not the best because we're big fans and we love Spider-Man, but like, you know, people who were casual Spider-Man fans were like, oh, this is a really good comic book right now. You know what I mean? Like, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway.
I will say I did like a lot of the character interactions here. The whole like Spider-Ham and Monkey meeting, I thought was a fun moment. And I thought the action was really fun and dynamic. I mean, it's one of the things that this book has to really avoid is it just being a lot of like talking heads and labeling. Mm-hmm, and I feel like it's not really been that. I mean, this issue has more of that than I think the first issue did. But
we are getting, sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, as I say, we are getting a fair amount of like panels where it's just everyone standing.
Yeah.
Through two issues, we've gotten at least like four or five of those illustrations. You know what I mean? Like, I just find that that's getting a little monotonous.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen again.
I hope not.
Everybody
well,
has
all broken
been
up
split
now.
Up.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm fine. Like, I think this is a like, I know that this might not be the best issue ever, but I'm glad everybody was split up. Like, I think this was a needed step because now we're just going to get Otto and Spider-Man kind of alone, like, and let their two different ideologies conflict. And that's what I want to read, you know? And I got all those side books to deal with whatever other stories are going on. So, and I think those have been fairly successful. I don't know that this story has grabbed me like Spider Island has yet, but,
right.
Well, I think it's still
early.
Building up. Yeah.
I think this has potential to go to some really big fun places. I mean, like, you know, as much as I am happy to be talking about Coming Home again in the second part of this show, you know, part of me also was like debating if we were going to go retro to maybe talk Spider Island because, you know, I feel like Spider Island ended so well that some of like the you know, the mediocrity of the earlier issues might be like glossed over by us now in retrospect. You know what I mean?
No,
like,
I agree with you. I think the first couple issues, I was kind of skeptical as well.
I mean, I remember liking the I don't know if you would call it the prologue, but the very first issue, like with the Statue of Liberty on the cover. And then it was kind of like a couple of issues. It was like the six-arm shocker issue. I was like, what's this? You know what I mean? Like, okay, we've been there. We've done that. And then by like the fourth part, like all hell started breaking loose and it was just a wonderful story for me.
Yeah,
so,
no, I'm right in agreement with you there. You know what? One, can I point one thing out that's kind of irked me? And I think I've mentioned this before. We get an appearance here from Spider-Man from 2211.
You just do not like this character, do you?
Well, he's dead.
Saying that, but like what you know, based on what rules?
Right, exactly. So I guess this goes into your rules again.
Yeah, like, I mean, you know, a lot of these characters are probably dead one way or another.
I guess,
you know?
You're right. Ben is dead and he's back. So and then there's that whole I didn't bring this up last issue, but like in the Ultimate Universe, when like they get attacked in the Ultimate Universe and they get Miles out of there, are people forgetting that Peter Parker is hanging around in that universe?
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. Well, you know, this kind of would then dovetail with the idea that this storyline was kind of written a while ago. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's true.
But you're right. And you know what? Like, is it me or does Miles not get enough play in this issue?
No, he doesn't. But I'm hoping he'll get a big moment.
Yeah, I mean, like, Miles warrants a moment, and like, you could just tell that I feel like thus far there's, I don't know if maybe Slott is hesitant to write Miles because he's such a Bendis creation, but...
I thought he did a fine job at the end of the first issue.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't do much with him.
Yeah, I want to see more Miles, though, because I'm hooked on Miles, and, you know, it sounds like it sounds like he's probably going to either be joining the 616 universe at some point, or he's going to be going away altogether, unless they're faking us out with killing off Ultimate again. But, you know,
I think it's a fake out. Is there anything you wanted to bring up before we wrap this thing up?
Can I make one more comment about Quipil's art?
Yeah, sure.
It's really great, and I love it. But he does this thing, and, you know, like, I was, like, looking back at some old panels of House of M, and he does the same thing there. And I feel like it compresses the images so much, especially if you're, like, viewing it on, like, an iPad or something, where, like, he does these, like, double-page horizontal spreads where there's, like, one anchor image that's, like, usually, like, to the left side that, you know, kind of, like, and then he like does all these like little secondary panels around it. You know what I'm talking about?
It's I know exactly what you're talking about.
And I feel like it kind of disrupts the flow of the narrative. I sometimes have a hard time figuring out because he's got stuff, you know, in that one main image, he's got stuff at the top, he's got stuff at the bottom, you know, including like word balloons and stuff like that. And I'm kind of like, does that impede your reading at all, or am I just being like an old fuddy-duddy?
No, it doesn't impede my reading. I don't think he's as kinetic of an artist and with his layouts as someone like Humberto Ramos is.
Right.
But like, I will happily trade some of that kineticism for like the clarity of his images.
Yeah.
So, agreed. You know, it's a give and take. I thought this book was beautiful.
Yeah, no,
I'm waiting for him to be able to loosen up a little bit with what's going on in the action.
Yeah, agreed. Definitely.
I mean, I thought all of his action scenes were really easy to read, and you could really tell like what was happening and when, right?
Yeah. No, I you're right. You're absolutely right.
I guess one remaining question I have, and maybe it'll be answered soon, is where is Morlun and Karn in this story?
Yeah, we haven't seen Karn in forever.
Yeah, so much was put on the back of them, and we haven't seen them. And I thought that would be a key dynamic, and I'm hoping that they appear in the next issue, and I think the solicitations hint that they will be. But, like, to me, those are the most interesting inheritors. Like, Deimos seemed just like a big, like, punching bag, and I guess we're going to deal with that in the 2099 issues, which we already have, and I like right. that issue a bit, but yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm ready to see like the main guys come into this story because I think Karn is a big part to play, and I'd like to see more characterization of him.
Yeah, absolutely. So, what's your grade, Dan?
I'm giving this one a B plus. I thought it was fun to read. Yeah, there's those little things, and it's kind of a bridge issue, but like, I'm willing to give it the benefit of the doubt that the rock is rolling downhill with this arc.
All right. Well, I mean, I'm going to bump this down a little bit. I'm going to say it's a B minus for me.
Okay, great.
I'm glad you don't hate me for that opinion.
No. Look, I totally understand where you're coming from. And, like, I think a lot of it is just the nature of reading these, like, you know, we don't normally get six-issue arcs from Slott even. You know, a lot of this, I think, is a lot just, like, reading it in this nature. And I think it'll probably end up a lot like Spider Island.
Yeah, well, you know, time will tell, and, you know, I'm still on board. I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes next.
Yeah, I'm excited. I want to see that confrontation that's hinted at the end. I love that image, by the way.
Absolutely. Yeah. No doubt. And it was admitted that Spider-Man looked a little bit like Andrew Garfield on the profile.
Yeah, absolutely he did. Absolutely he did. Which I don't mind. I think that's a fine way to interpret him.
So is that the Sonyverse version of Spider-Man? No, yeah,
it's all a fake out. Oh, yeah. All right, well, let's get to your comments and emails.
All right, everybody, now is the time of the show where you guys write in and leave comments and do all that other great stuff, and we'll respond to you, we'll read it, we love to hear from you. That's what it boils down to. So, of course, when it comes to ratings and reviews, well, first of all, you should already be subscribing to us through iTunes or Stitcher, and you can do that very easily just by searching on Amazing Spider Talk or just Spider-Man. And when you're there, you hit subscribe, you listen to a couple episodes, you tell us how much you love us by going on iTunes or going on Stitcher, leaving us a review and a rating. And then, you know, again, we'll read that on the air. And then if you have a question or a speculation or a comment about anything that we're talking about, you can, of course, email us. And that email address is amazingspidertalk@gmail.com. Dan, why don't you read the first comment we got on iTunes here?
Awesome. Well, our first comment comes from Chem Chop SCL. It could be Chem Chops CL. I don't know. But thanks for writing in, whoever you are. And the title is Excellent Podcast, 5 out of 5. And this person says, I am still in the early podcast, but you guys have brought back my love of Spider-Man. I stopped reading them towards the end of the Clone Saga and haven't read one since. Now I'm catching up from Superior Number 1. Thanks so much. So great to hear intelligent conversations about Spider-Man. Can't wait to see what happens. Well, someone who stopped reading at the end of Clone Saga. Sounds familiar, huh, Mark?
Oh, my goodness. I think that's there's a club of us, and there's got to be a couple of thousand, I think, at least.
But, yeah, absolutely.
Maybe more. So this next comment on iTunes is from Lego Christian. Lego writes in, amazingly superior to every other Spider-Man podcast ever, 5 out of 5 stars. And further, flip up a chair, grab a slice of Papa Jonah's pizza, and get ready to enjoy the best spider commentary around. Dan and Mark are incredibly knowledgeable and can back up their opinions, having read these comics for years. They split up their show into easy-to-navigate segments, predicated by appropriate music. On iOS, pictures and links enhance the experience with every thwip. Special guest episodes give an inside look into how the sausage is made, what goes into making an issue or an arc, or even an entire character. Uncle Ben would be proud. In summary, stupendous, spectacular, stunning, superior, amazing. Thank you so much, Lego. That was really cool.
Yeah, that was a really nice review. Thanks, man. And I hope you're enjoying your Papa Jonah's pizza. I'm never going to get over that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a thing. And don't forget about the Frito pizza. Never forget about the Frito pizza.
I'm trying my hardest to forget about that.
I just took a box of Prilosec thinking about the Frito pizza. we got some emails, right, Dan?
Yeah, absolutely. So our first email comes in from Owen from Newfoundland in Canada. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Maybe that makes me somewhat of a...
Newfoundland.
Newfoundland. Is that right?
I think so. Okay. I was on Carmen San Diego, so, you know.
You're right. You were.
I didn't win, but I was on.
You got, for those of you out there, if you can find Mark on Carmen San Diego on the internet, you got to do it.
I can tell you the episode name.
Yeah, what's the episode name?
I think it's because Vic the Slick was the villain, so I think it was the Slick, Slick Ship Ripoff.
There you go.
So go on whoever's hosting Carmen San Diego episodes. Look that one up, and you will see a 11-year-old me
in a great hat.
In a very snazzy hat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, the questions.
Owen wrote in, and he wrote a really nice letter to us about his only complaint with the show is that he can't get on and talk to us. So he's doing the next best thing. So
there you go.
He says, just wondering what your thoughts were on how Dan Slott seems to push hard to introduce and develop new characters or radically alter an existing character. It seems like he pushes these characters hard at the expense of developing or working with existing characters as they've been established over the years. This seems especially true of Peter lately, to the point where they're missing for many issues at a time, or in the case of Peter, almost seem like bystanders around which all these other characters are pushed. So, Mark, what do you say to that assertion?
Well, you know, we've talked about this before, and you know, yeah, I mean, Dan Slott does it, but so does every other creator, you know? Like, I think it's just kind of what comes with being a comic book creator. You know, like, take someone like Roger Stern, who, you know, we talk about so fondly, and, like, you know, Stern is someone who, you know, for example, really loved the Vulture. And, like, you know, started writing all these stories where he gave, like, the Vulture an origin, you know? Like, I mean, so talk about reinventing a character that he just had a personal affinity towards. Or even in terms of new characters, look what he did with the Hobgoblin. I mean, the Hobgoblin was all a part of Stern's initial run. And then when someone else got to reveal the Hobgoblin, Stern retconned it 10 years later with a miniseries. So, I mean, this is not new. I mean, I don't. You know, that's what these creators do. Like, you can't get too upset by it. You know, you can't think that someone's doing it more than the other, because I think when you really look at it objectively, you notice that they're all doing it.
And in the long run, any of these developments that aren't liked will be totally forgotten. Like, I can't tell you how many Catwoman stories, or not Catwoman, Black Cat stories, like, don't count anymore. Like, there are so many, like, stories that just don't count. If people don't like Silk, guess who will be forgotten 5 years from now?
Yeah.
What do you respond to his point? I mean, we've talked about this before, that, you know, Peter's kind of being pushed around or a bystander in his own book.
Yeah, I mean, no, I certainly don't disagree with that. But I don't know. I agree.
I guess maybe we don't need to respond. We've kind of talked about this already. Yeah, but it seems like maybe things are starting to pick up. You know, I'm sure Peter will be the focal point again real soon. Just go listen to our past couple episodes, and you'll get an idea of how we feel about that.
Yeah, exactly.
So we got an email from another follower of the show.
Yeah, this is our good friend Alton, who actually wasn't really – it's not a question. He's writing in with a bit of an update. I guess you can call it a correction to something we had talked about in the last episode. Alton writes that about the Captain Britain Corps. It wasn't a shot at the Green Lantern Corps. It's a thing. It's a league of superheroes, all of them Captain Britain, but from different universes. They protect the multiverse from a dimension called the Other World. They're powered by the friction between the dimensions. Otherworld and Captain Britain factor heavily into Rick Remender's Uncanny X-Force as 616 Captain Britain. Brian Braddock is the brother of Psylocke. That's a member of the X-Men for the uninitiated. Also, in the scene, the collapse of the multiverse with Saturnine and Lady Roma, they're referring to the events going on in Avengers and New Avengers. And in that regard, talking about the incursions, the parallel worlds colliding with one another. which is going to probably set off Secret Wars next year. So Alton, thank you for updating us on that. And you know, that this goes to anyone. You know, if we're talking about something here that you suspect might be incorrect or, you know, or needs more illumination, you know, I know you all think we know everything, but I don't think we really profess to know everything, right, Dan? I
mean, and my reading of Marvel is pretty limited to the Spider-Man books, purely for a money standpoint. I'm in grad school. I can't really spend on everything.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, like Alton, just write in. Let us know. We'll, you know, if it's appropriate to read on the air, we will. but, you know, point being is, you know, if we're wrong, we want to know that we're wrong because we don't want to be, you know, perpetuating false information. So thank you, Alton. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, we got an email from our good friend Tom Aiello again, and he asks us, now that Spider-Verse is in full swing, what spider people do you want to see die? What spider people can you just not wait to see have their life force sucked out by the Inheritors? Who are these spider hated and why? Mark, I have had the hardest times ever since I got this email thinking of an answer to this. I just don't know that there's a Spider-Man that I dislike all that much.
How about emo spider from the Sonyverse?
Yeah, if that counts, then yes. If I can erase Spider-Man 3, then yes, I will do it.
Just the whole movie, you know, Bryce Howard's Gwen Stacy, Peter's crying over Harry's corpse. Anyway, we don't need to go over why we don't like Spider-Man 3. I'm trying to think of somebody else.
I wouldn't mind Spider-Man Unlimited dying, but he's already dead, so it doesn't really, like, I don't hate him. It just was a TV show I didn't really enjoy, and I'm not really enjoying the Ultimate Spider-Man TV show of what I've seen of it, so maybe that guy? I don't know.
How about, you know, I... He's already dead, but the spider armor Spider-Man that for some reason a lot of people like that, and you know, I was on a podcast once talking about Spider-Man comics, and someone referred to that character as being a disco ball of justice, and I thought that was very accurate, and I agreed with that. And then some people like, no man, the spider armor is awesome. I'm like, all right. If you say so.
I mean, I guess I never really liked Spider-Man 2211, as I've alluded to in the past. Right. I wouldn't mind seeing him die again. emphasis on the again.
Again, for the eighth time. And then I guess, you know, is there anyone else? You know, radioactive sperm Spider-Man.
Hey, you take that back. I love Spider-Man Reign. And you know what? I guess I'm even more upset by his death in the Spider-Verse issue. One, because it was such a throwaway. But two, because that book ends on such a wonderfully ambiguous note about like whether he's alive or not. I mean, I guess, you know, either he's alive or it's his imagination or some poetic ending. But now, like, it concretely says, yes, he's alive, and guess what? We killed him. So there.
Anyway, this last email is from Vinny. Among other things, Vinny congratulates me for finishing my Chase. You're right on my tail though, Dan. So you know, keep up the good work.
So is Tom Aiello. He just emailed me, said he has two to go.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, what if Tom beat you, Dan?
I think he might. He had like 28 issues to go like a month ago, so that guy is on fire.
All right, we'll keep going, Tom. Well, anyway, Vinny also writes, he has a small critique for us. He'd like to hear some alternate openings and closings for the show. I can recite them both along with you guys. I understand the necessity for what you guys are saying, but maybe shake it up a bit. Give me something to stick around for in the last couple of minutes without just shutting off the podcast before it ends. I love the different way you guys did your Uncle Ben speech. So something along those lines would be interesting. Also, one request, not sure why, but every time I hear Mark's name, I imagine him saying, yo, what up? It's your boy, Giannacchio. Did I say that right, Dan? Mark, if you could say that in the next podcast, that would make me crack up. All right, I might work that in again later.
Okay.
Well, first of all, Vinny had a couple of little things, but just to touch on that first thing about mixing things up, you know, I think Dan and I don't need to be such creatures of habit. So you know, we'll mix it up. But if any of you got some ideas, or you know, what we could do that's different.
We kind of ran out of Uncle Ben moments. Like,
yeah.
You quickly realize that Uncle Ben has not done that much. You know, without getting incredibly niche and me spending like several hours digging for an Uncle Ben moment. If you want to send me some, like, I'll happily highlight them at the end of the episode.
So, and then, you know, something I've always actually thought about, this is not necessarily related to an opening or a closing, but I would love for us to have a theme song.
Yeah, that would be really awesome.
So, you know, let's put this out there right now. I mean, if we got listeners, fans out there that are musicians, no musicians, have written songs or whatever, let's talk. We need a theme song.
Yeah, and if you send us one and we like it, we will happily like plug your work every episode.
Yeah, I would say we will plug your band, plug your iTunes page, whatever. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So theme song, let's do it. Come on, of the five listeners, one of them has to be a musician, right, Dan?
Yeah, and you know what? If you do it, Mark will open the podcast every time with "Yo, what up? It's your boy Ginocchio."
Couple last comments from Vinny here. Whose dog was barking like crazy in that interview with Jason Latour and Robbie Rodriguez for Spider-Gwen? I assume not either of yours because it was unique to that interview. I believe it was in Robbie's house.
Yeah, Robbie's house, at least from my imagination, is just like a den of chaos.
Because like, I think even Jason at one point was like, dude, what's with the dog? and then last question, how do you guys conduct your interview? Is it via Skype? And yes, it is.
It is. I wish we could do it in person. That would be really fun. Maybe one time when I come back to the East Coast, we could do something like that.
Yeah, well, you know, we were kind of in person when we did the Connecticut Comic Con interviews.
That's true. That is true.
You know, you were like, yeah, you know, we were sitting 3 inches from each other. It was romantic.
It was romantic. oh, those sweet memories.
I know. Todd DeFalco thought so. Get away from me, you idiots.
Yeah. So we do it over Skype, and you know, we have some problems here and there. Anytime you hear audio problems, that's because of the nature of Skype, and you know, even just today recording this, we've had some internet issues. So, you know, take some patience. But yeah, that's how we do it, Skype.
Boom. All right. So let's talk about donations.
And a little greater, walk a little prouder, be an innovator, laugh a little louder, joke a refrigerator, we can show you how to. And when will you be then? You'll belong, you'll belong, you'll belong, you'll belong to the Merry Marble Marching Society. March along to the song of the Merry Marble Marching Society. If you growl, if you groan, with the dour sour up, look, if you howl, if you moan, you can lose your sour crust. You keep me trim and in step with the vim and thump step of the Merry Marble Marching Society.
All right, now is the time of the show where we thank all of you stupendous people who have decided to donate your money to the show, and you have opted to join the Friendly Neighborhood Spider Talk Members Club. This week, we have no new members. Wah, wah.
Yeah, they're just not coming in. But, you know, Christmas is coming up. Maybe someone's saving up to give us a really nice gift.
All I want for Christmas is more Spider Talk members.
Yeah, well, it's how we keep the show going and how we pay for all of our microphones and hosting of the show, which actually is getting quite expensive because we have a lot of episodes being hosted. for each episode, we assign a member a number and randomly decide who gets what digital comic from us. This week, I have like 15 comics to give away. So instead of going through the list, I'm just going to email everybody who's a member. So all you members out there, check your email because you're going to get a code from us. And if you want to join the club and get some free comics, you know, just go onto our websites. Mark, how might they find our way of joining?
If you would like to become a member of the Friendly Neighborhood Spider Tuck Members Club and help support our show, please go to our sites and click on the giant button that reads Friendly Neighborhood Spider Tuck Members Club. Friendly Neighborhood Spider Tuck Members Club. Friendly Neighborhood Spider Tuck Members Club. See, I got. How many times do you need me to say it every episode, Dan?
Mark, you better stick to that script. I'm coming over there.
I got to stick to our poorly joke enhanced script.
Look, I've never been the best comedian, but I'm trying something here. Yeah. We still get emails from people like, "Why did you name your club that?" Like, I want everyone to know we named it that as a joke.
Exactly. Well, it's a spin on the Merry Marvel Marching Society.
That is true. That is true. That's exactly what I was thinking. Anyway, yeah. It's a joke. Friendly Neighborhood Spider Tuck Members Club is a thing. Get used
to it. It's a thing. It's a thing. Like Papa Jonas Pizza with Fritos.
Yeah. Anyway, we hope that some of you guys feel like joining. And if not, great. Our show's still free. So enjoy it.
And that's how we get new members. You could pay for the show, but why would you?
Well, what do you
So let's go retro. Let's go back to my old school, Dan.
Is that true?
No. Well, because he's going back to school. I don't know. I thought it was a good segue.
No dark sarcasm in the classroom. Teacher, leave them kids alone.
Well, Mark, we're back for the second part of the Coming Home arc. Amazing Spider-Man Volume 2, number 31, for all of those of you reading at home. And we do recommend that you read this stuff at home because, like we said earlier, this is one of our favorite stories, in Spider-Man history, like ever, I would say, yeah?
Yeah. Wait, yeah. Say that was I missed you. Say that question again.
It's one of your favorite stories in Spider-Man history.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, this story just gets me jazzed up every single time, Dan.
Good. Well, we're going to talk about it, so let's get jazzed up again.
All right. Well, sorry. You go.
Oh. Okay. Well, so the story starts off with this wonderful scene with Peter and Aunt May. Peter having just had that run in with Ezekiel, where he basically asked him the $3 million question to blow his mind about the spider and his origins, whether he was fated to be bit by the spider or whether it was an accident, what gave him his powers, and Peter is mulling it over at the breakfast table. Mark, what do you think of this scene?
Well, you know what? We get our first extended look at Aunt May here, and he just nails this character. I mean, is there a better Aunt May than JMS's Aunt May?
No, I think this is the definitive Aunt May. Like, this is the best. Even just from the get-go, you can tell she's, like, really, like, witty and on Peter, like, understands how he works, has good advice for him. I mean, yeah, this is the most supporting character has ever been.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only version that comes close is maybe what Bendis has done in Ultimate with her, but, like, you know, like, that's almost coming from a different angle. I mean, like, you know, Straczynski was kind of working within a framework here of what the character was already established as, and still just goes to such wonderful places that there's still, I think, you buy in on, though, you know, like it's, you know, I mean, she hadn't been written as like this, you know, withering old dying woman since the Ditko Lee years. So, you know, we were able to go well past that, but like she's just got so much personality and, you know, the way she jokes with him and like, she's also very motherly and caring, you know, when she jokes, oh, you've had that look in your eyes since you were a child, you know, and I just know to wait until you come out of it. And like, it's just such a great scene. Like these are the character scenes where I'm like, God, Straczynski can write, man. Like when he was so on.
Yeah. And this just leads into a number of really wonderful Aunt May stories. And already you're going to get the sense here that there's, is going to be a real change in their relationship. I love that Peter is so lost in his own mind thinking about this. It reminds me a lot of like why the character was a loner in high school and throughout college. He would be so worried about his life as Spider-Man and the things back at home that he would ignore his classmates, which made them think that he was like, you know, thought he was better than them. And here he's doing it again, and it's completely in character with his Aunt May, and she recognizes that he's just kind of in his own little world. And I thought that was just a wonderful portrayal of the Peter Parker character.
Yeah, no question. I mean, it's just so good. And like you said, this is just a taste of things to come when it comes to this character dynamic. And then, like, you know, more great writing with Moreland here. Like the poetic nature of Moreland talking about the croissant in relation to this beautiful, delicate thing that someone will just devour in a bite as Spider-Man is swinging in the distance. I mean, like, that's just great stuff, you know?
Yeah, right. And Moreland is looking pretty bad here. Like, he really needs to feast on something.
He needs more than a croissant.
Yeah. Yeah. And the sequence with his partner, his assistant, where he asks Moreland very offhandedly just to kill him.
Oh, like, yeah. Like,
that stuff creeps me out.
The character is just perfect. I mean, just in general, the character, he's just so dangerously enigmatic. You know what I mean? Like, it's like he doesn't even lift a finger in a story. You don't see one. Evident one demonstration of his powers. He's just there, and you're just like, but he commands such a presence in this story.
Yeah, absolutely. Even just in a small little scene. What about Ezekiel though? Like, I like this Ezekiel scene. I mentioned the Peter being lost in his mind. Here we have the same thing kind of happening to Ezekiel. He's kind of lost in his own mind during this business meeting, and it's, I guess, our first hint that Ezekiel owns. This business has all this money and resources, and also that he might not be as friendly to Peter as we might have suspected.
Yeah, there's definitely some reasons to distrust Ezekiel here, and just the other and the fact that, like, I mean in rereading this, you know, in anticipation for this podcast, like I caught that one little exchange with the assistant. And I forgot that, like, you know, like, other people at that company know what's up with Ezekiel. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like he's living completely in secret here. So it's like, what's that about? You know what I mean? Like, again, it's just kind of begging that mystery along.
Yeah, really interesting stuff. If I didn't know how it ended, you know, really intriguing. For me, the highlight of this issue, because these are kind of all like check-ins, I think. The highlight here is Peter's going back to his school again after Aunt May's kind of advice and the little story that goes on there. Just wonderful stuff, I think.
I mean, yeah, the school stuff is great, but I got to tell you, and again, this was something that kind of came back to me upon rereading this story. You know, it's amazing how much you forget details when it's been a while, but... with that school shooting or the shooter. I mean, like, it's, especially in light of recent events, because, I mean, you got to keep in mind when this was first written, this was, what, 2001? So, I mean, there had been Columbine at that point. But like this whole thing with school shootings, it was still kind of a novelty, for lack of a better word. Whereas now it's like, you know, you have, it seems like you get a couple of them a year. So like that just the tension of that, like I actually like rereading it today felt like my pulse starting to race, like during that scene. Like, and it's a credit to Straczynski and Romina and how they construct it. But I mean, that was just really surprisingly intense for me.
And not dated. Like,
no, I think
more prevalent than ever.
Yeah, I mean, it's the scene's still relevant today, and I think maybe even more so because, you know, again, you had Columbine in 98, a few years before this was published, but you know, there was still like that idea, like there was a fantasy to it, you know, like oh, this it happened once or twice, but this won't happen here, and now it's. This can happen, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, whether, you know, school, mall, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, the gun violence has just become so prevalent in American society. So, yeah, it's just like, I mean, not to repeat myself, but it just stunned me how, I guess, tense and unsettling that scene was reading it today, you know, reading it in 2014.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, people often comment on how JMS's Spider-Man was so mystical, like, you know, and like magic oriented, but I think that they often forget and miss out on how, like, street level and socially oriented the book is. In the time, like, there are things of him dealing with homeless children and things like that in this story, and this is the start of it here. I guess Parker's more, I guess, social role as a teacher that he takes on, and I thought it was just a wonderful, you know, we have him punching villains so often, but like some of the worst violence and some of the worst villains are like our own culture and what it breeds.
Yeah. But then also, I mean, in terms of the tale of the two kids in this issue, you know, you have the one, you know, kind of the science geek, so to speak, that he met last issue, where, you know, the two of them work together to, you know, ignite the chemical smoke that you know, basically saves everybody.
Which, by the way, is just beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful imagery, nice coloring.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, this is you know, the Romita and Scott Hanna, I believe, was the anchor on this one. You know, Scott Hanna, who did so much with Romita during that run. And then the fact that kid's then revealed as like another guy, and you know, you have the teacher who kind of like, well, you know, why won't he just stop acting weird? And it's just like, you know, again, like that, you know, the parallels of, you know, here's Peter reaching out to this one kid that's weird and, you know, like probably instills the confidence in him that, you know, would prevent him from going down that dark path. And then you have this other kid who, you know, clearly, you know, was brushed aside not only by his classmates, but by adults. And look where he ended up. And it's just like, you know, again, it was relevant then. It feels even more relevant now. Yeah, and it just you know, I know, obviously it's just, I see the future, but the fact that this issue exists and you could just read that now and it just seems, you know, so poignant.
Yeah, and you know, we've talked about this during Superior, but like Peter even says it here that like he could have seen himself very easily going down that path to becoming the shooter kid. And,
yeah.
And it's just, you know, as someone who was bullied as a child, I don't know that I ever had that dark of thoughts, but like, you know, the ideas of revenge do cross your mind. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, this is still the character who, you know, in his very first appearance says, I'm going to, I'll show them on the front page, you know, and I think that's a sentiment. I mean, you know, I was certainly bullied too as a kid and, you know, there was that element to it, not, you know, nothing violent necessarily, but that I'll show them, you know, like, and you know, that's, this is why we love Peter Parker at the end of the day.
I want to speak on another personal note the callous teacher at the end that basically is like, well, you know, they bullied him, but everybody's kind of got to pick up their own, you know, do their own thing and, you know, fight harder for themselves, you know. And I, you know, as a teacher myself, I have encountered that teacher as one of my coworkers, and I can't tell you, like, those people are the plague on the teaching community, and they exist probably more often than not. People that just don't want to involve themselves and don't want to support their students. I mean, it's also the toughest part of being a teacher is that you have to deal with things, not deal with things like that, but like that is an active part of your life is shaping the world of these kids.
Yeah.
And that guy is just as bad as the kid who exploded to become the shooter because he's creating more victims. And to my final point, the I'm the new science teacher image at the very end, to me, that's an iconic image. Like, that is one of my all-time Peter Parker moments and images.
Yeah. No, that's I mean, it's that last line is just great. I mean, like, you know, I think I said it sends chills up my spine. And yeah, it is. It's just a great image. I mean, you know, like this like, kind of what I said earlier in the show, this book at this moment was at the top of its game. You know, like I'm thinking back about this. You know, I mean, the storyline won an Eisner. I mean, so that's number one.
Oh, it did.
Yeah, it did. So, you know, it's best serialized story. And like, you know, it's like, you know, the way people talk about like what Mark Waid's doing on Daredevil now or these creators who are taking these known products and like kind of just churning out top quality stuff. I mean, that's what this was, you know. I mean, you know, like it's you kind of have to be like, I mean, and this is not a knock on Dan Slotter, what we're getting right now, but like it's you know, it really wasn't all that long ago where, you know, I mean, Amazing Spider-Man was considered the book to read, and this was why, because I mean, and this story, you know, this was the story that put it back on the map, you know.
Yeah, and you know, in a story where we get barely any Spider-Man in it. You know, this is a Peter Parker story, as I think the best Spider-Man stories often are, a Peter Parker story first and foremost.
Yeah, I mean, he really only has one scene, and that's when he's swinging during the croissant, and, you know, his sense goes off in a crazy way, right? I mean,
yeah, I love how he, like, goes, I'm just going to leave. Well, I guess I'm just going to kind of sneak away.
Oh, man. I like, you don't understand how excited I am that we're talking about the storyline the way we are, Dan. So
I love it. I love it so much.
And 32's got one of my all time favorite Spider-Man scenes in it. So you know,
Well, I'm really looking forward to talking to you about it then.
Yeah, stay tuned for next episode.
And if you're not reading, like, you know, do anything you can to go and check out this book.
Yeah,
I think if you find the trade paperback, it's actually like the first Amazing Spider-Man number one trade paperback, because they kind of relaunched the trades, and it's got the image of Peter removing his mask and looking over his shoulder on the cover.
Okay. I mean, I know it's on Marvel Unlimited, so I mean, so you could always do that too.
Yeah.
You know, I think they were doing some kind of promotion during Cyber Monday for like 75 cents for the first month or something. So,
Yeah, I did see that.
So
you can also just buy the issues on the Marvel app too.
Yeah, they're probably what, $2 a pop?
Yeah, probably something like that.
Yeah, so
well worth it.
Yeah, so why don't you take us home, Dan?
Awesome. Well, of course, you can find all of our new Amazing Spider Talk and old Superior Spider Talk podcast at superiorspidertalk.com, or find us on iTunes and Stitcher by searching Amazing Spider Talk. And if you do, please leave a rating and comment and let us know how we're doing, and we'll read it on the air just like we did today. And Mark, I think maybe we forgot to note this, but we passed our 50th episode a couple episodes back, and I guess we're well on our way towards 100.
Yeah, so we had our glow in the dark cover episode. Now we need to have our tombstone embossed episode.
Who's gonna die in that one? Mark or me?
I just love that when I gave that issue to Bagley and DeMatteis at Connecticut Comic Con, they both separately were like, I hate that cover.
Well, that makes four of us, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. In one of my comicbook.com lists, I did list it as one of the 10 stupidest 90s gimmick covers. So,
There you go. Well, if you have any opinions on that cover or any of these comics that we've covered, or any questions at all, you can email them to us at amazingspidertalk@gmail.com, and we'll address and read them on the air.
Yeah, and also, as always, check our Facebook pages at facebook.com/superiorspidertalk and facebook.com/chasingamazing, as Dan and I post updates of articles that we've written or solicit questions and feedback from you guys.
Or even free comic book codes.
Free comic book codes, little news tidbits. These Facebook pages are a great resource for us and for you. So, check out those pages. Give us a like. Make us feel popular for half a second and do that. And also, I can't forget to say, check out our friendly neighborhood Spider Talk Members Club that helps support our show. Because we like your money. No, it's because you're supporting a good cause.
Of course it is.
Yes.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more.
Exactly. So Dan, since we want to mix things up a little bit, why don't you tell us a little bit about what we're going to find on Superior Spider Talk over the next week or two?
Well, this week is a pretty slow week. We have no new comics out. But we have some wonderful comics of our own that we're going to be putting out. Our artist, our resident artist, Ray Sumser, has just submitted his next batch of Spectacular Spider Bites, which is our own comic that we make, our funny comic, the Sunday comics. And they are really great. So come by on Friday and you'll see our latest comic from Ray Sumser.
And Ray perpetuates the Papa Jonah pizza thing. So, again, it's not just me, Dan.
Yeah, I almost didn't want to publish that one. No. It was very funny. So, check out the whole archive of those comics on the site. And, of course, you can follow me and the site at SupSpiderTalk on Twitter.
Awesome.
How about you, Mark? What do we got coming up in your neck of the woods?
Yeah. Well, Chasing Amazing, I've been kind of playing catch up because I was both away on a business trip and then had Thanksgiving the past 2 weeks, which also explains why we didn't get a podcast out until now. So I'm playing catch up with some of the new releases that came out over those 2 weeks. But starting next week, which would be the week of the 8th, depending on when you're listening on this, I'm going to be starting my second annual Reader Request Month. I did this last year. I think I even wrote a nice little piece about Dan and Stegron, if memory serves. I've already gotten some pretty interesting suggestions, but basically what this is I write about the stuff that you guys ask me to, as long as I haven't written about it in the past, which if you want to find out what that is, if you go on my homepage, www.chasingamazingblog.com, you can click. I have a checklist and a blind spots checklist. The blind spots are like all of the B titles of stuff I've written about. Whereas the checklist is all the ASMs I've written about. So if you see something, if you don't see something and you want me to talk about it, tweet me at ChasingASMBlog on Twitter or just leave me a comment on Facebook. But I will do it. I'll try and get, certainly at least one of these a week. But, if I end up getting a lot of these, maybe I'll do a few more. So.
Awesome, Mark. Well, I have to submit something to you to write about myself. Well, I guess that's about it. Mark, why don't you end the show for us?
Sure. not to say the same thing over and over until we come up with a better ending. Let's remember the good old sage advice of old man Spider Ezekiel. No, I meant Uncle Ben. Which is, with great podcasts, there must also come Amazing Spider Talk.